This is RJ City, and you are listening to Let the Hate Flow Through You with Jeremy Shear and El Yordano Diablo.
Let the hate flow!
Available on the Lousy Weather Media Network.
Welcome to Let the Hate Flow Through You, your weekly dose of audible hatred. I'm Jeremy Shear.
El Yordano Diablo.
And joining us for the second time on the program this week is a comedian, producer, musician, podcaster. He wears many hats, but he doesn't have any bald spots to cover up. It's Jeremy Demery.
Hello. I am also a television and movie producer now.
A television and movie producer.
Yeah, I filmed a eight episode series over the summer.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, for a comedian in Columbus.
Okay.
Yeah, filmed it, directed, produced.
That's nice. Awesome, man.
Hell yeah.
Who would have thought 15 years ago that we'd all be here?
Yeah, I wouldn't. If you would have told me 15 years ago I'd still be alive, I'd be like, with the way I drive?
Yeah.
No, I didn't think I'd still be alive. Hell, I didn't think like 90% of the shit that I've been doing requires paperwork. Like,
says the guy who sent me a release.
A release.
Me. Yeah. I just, I never expected to have to do shit like this.
I never expected somebody to fucking tell us they weren't signing a release.
Who was that?
I don't want to put any names out there, but somebody, there was a comedian who, what was it, Shear? The person said,
I can't sign over my likeness rights to you without talking to a lawyer first. And I was like, if you don't have time to email a lawyer, then please don't contact me again.
Yeah.
Because, like, it takes 5 minutes to email your lawyer and be like, hey, should I sign this? And then they'll either tell you yes or no and then charge you $100 for it.
Yeah, I was going to say, oh, that's a person who really doesn't have a lawyer.
Yeah.
That's exactly what Shear said.
Yeah, that's... Because, yeah, I've got three lawyers on speed dial, and any one of them would be like yes or no in 5 minutes.
Yeah, I've got a lawyer. He's a punk rock lawyer.
A punk rock lawyer?
Yeah. You know Zach from Pillars?
No.
Yeah, he's my lawyer.
That's okay. Awesome.
Yeah,
that's
he's
awesome.
In a metal band. He's a sweet guy.
Yeah. So, Jeremy, why do you hate people that are just now saying everything is politics?
Because everything has always been politics from the dawn of
politics.
The dawn of like politics or like any kind of governmental system that's been in place for the longest fucking time. And like, are we allowed to curse on here? It's crazy to me. Like, you can't even take a shit without politics being involved. Like, the water that you use to take a shit in was all legislated over.
Yeah.
And how it was operated.
Who and you pay for it.
Yeah, you pay for it. And even the toilet paper you use to wipe your ass with is taxed. So when was everything not politics?
I think everything was not politics when their own identities were not being targeted by the people in power.
That is true. But I think it's mostly the people who aren't being targeted that think everything has become political these days.
Mm.
I mean, even just like, it's just funny, like, just because I was looking into being a counselor, like a drug counselor. And it's like all the fucking bureaucracy you have to jump through. And I get it. You don't want some just fucking asshole doing like who just sign up. Oh, I'm a counselor now. Like, I get that, but, like, every little thing, you have to submit your certificates in certain ways, and you got to pay for that. It's all bullshit. Like, yeah. Everything is about money. Politics is money, and everything is that.
Yeah, I mean, it's their only reason for functioning is the fact that it's just a cash grab. Like, it's my reasoning for prohibition for the longest time was they didn't really have a handle on taxing alcohol.
Yeah.
So they're just like, fuck it, we're going to legalize it for a little while until we can figure out a way where we can handle taxes with it. and then make it legal again.
Well, yeah, and they were the ones fucking bootlegging it too.
Oh,
to
for
make
sure.
To make buku bucks off of it until they figured out how they could do it legitimately.
And it was like somebody did a study saying that like during Prohibition there was more people drinking than there were when they legalized it.
Yeah, I saw. Yeah. Well, because it becomes taboo. I mean, like, that's like when they tell you, when you're told you can't do this,
right?
A large majority of us go, no, I'm going to fucking do it.
Well, right. I think part of it is also it became trendy. Like, you could go to these, you know something about this, you could go to these secret cool spaces and be with the top socialites of the day.
Yeah, the exclusivity of community was definitely, like, another attracting factor.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same reason people go to churches half the time, is that it's not even so much the religion, it's the community of it.
Dude, I believe it was Carlin who said, church isn't about God, it's somewhere you go on Sundays to compare clothes.
Yeah.
And that's so fucking on
so
point.
Good.
And judge other people.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, these places that are supposed to be judgment free and all that, it's like, or, you know, only God can judge us. And they're sitting there, oh, you know what so-and-so did? You know what so... It's all gossip and bullshit.
Well, also, in, like, retrospect, too, you could also become very, very good at looking confident or looking good when inside you're complete turmoil.
Oh, you mean, like, social media?
Or, no, just in general.
No, I'm like, just saying, like, that's exactly what social... Like, oh, look at how great my life is. No, nobody's life is that great, dude.
Right. Yeah, because you're only showing people the things you want them to see.
Right.
But, like, I don't know. I had a thing recently where somebody was like, oh, you carry yourself in a way of, like, seeming very confident or having characteristics of leadership or whatever. And I was like, yeah, I used to go to a church. Like, that was most of my church, was trying to look like I had my shit together more than having it together.
Fake it till you make it.
Exactly. And I mean, well, look at the industry we're in. Like, that's 95% of it is perception.
Yeah.
Like, you got to make people believe that you're bigger than you actually are. Like, you know, technically I'm unemployed and not doing shit.
But you're a producer.
I'm doing a lot of stuff for not doing anything at all.
Sometimes titles look better than the money coming in. You
know
what I mean?
That's true. That's very true.
Oh, yeah. Believe me, I know all about that.
Yeah. I think we all know all
yeah,
about that.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
And that's just art in general. Like, your titles are like the majority of the payment. Or, like, if I got paid or, like, if exposure turned into actual dollar amounts, then I would probably be one of the richest people in Cleveland.
Yeah. Let me cash in those exposure checks.
Right.
And admittedly, I think my big exposure sets, like, that I had did not go according to plan. So maybe my check would be a little less. It was like, yes, this is your big break, but you were so drunk you couldn't stand at the end of the night. So,
and to be honest with you, it probably wasn't a big break. But at the same time, you're still at work. You still need to show up. You need to still be coherent. You need to showcase your abilities. Mm-hmm. And if you're inebriated to a point of not being able to perform, then that's what you get known as.
Yeah.
I never did that.
Oh my God. I still remember the night where you repeated a joke four times.
Yeah.
And then the fourth time we told you, for the third time, you've repeated this joke already. You looked at us like we were wrong. It was so funny.
I'm glad it ended up being funny for people, because, like, that's one of those moments that, like, I've talked about that in rehab where I was
really?
Like, oh, yeah, absolutely. I've been like, that's just, like, so fucking embarrassing. And luckily, they all found it funny after the fact. But it was, like, one of those just cringe moments for me where I'm like, you fucking asshole.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's 95% of, like, most moments in life for other people that it's really funny. mm-hmm. where like, oh, it was really funny to watch this person go through this, but in their world, it was like
devastating.
Yeah, oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Luckily, I do have that ability to laugh at myself, where I'm just like, ah, fuck it. You know what I mean? It's no big deal.
That was almost the topic I picked, was like the most embarrassing moments of your life.
Mm. Dude, we could do days on that.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's not very hateful though. That's the thing. Like, I was like, oh, that's not very like. It's not that I hate those moments.
Isn't
like,
that what I go to therapy for?
Yeah, that's true. That's yeah. Because the whole thing about me looking confident was my therapist talking.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, yeah, I went to church growing up,
right?
Like, and I, you know, I try not to reference my therapist as often as possible, because it would, I'd be constantly be saying in therapy,
yeah,
in therapy,
yeah.
Or my therapist. This is the only person I talk to. So.
Yeah. No, I get it, because it's the one person that you're paying to talk to.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
My only friend is my therapist.
Yeah, the only friend. Yeah, that's how you know you've had substance abuse issues, when your only friends left in your life is the person you're paying to be around.
Yeah. And they can't even stand you sometimes. Yeah. They just can't say
or
it.
They don't understand you.
Yeah.
They're like,
yeah.
Oh, I really kind of perceived you as a confident person. I was like, no.
No, no, I'm a piece of shit,
yeah,
actually.
I'm a mess.
I have found that therapy helps when, like, I just need somebody to help me hang on to the ledge.
Mm.
But in terms of actually like maintenance, I get no benefit from it.
Yeah.
And I think mostly that's because I'm in trauma therapy. Like, I can't do regular therapy.
Nope.
Because I've had people, too many people fired at this point.
CBT does not really work for trauma, in my opinion. Like, I went through a trauma class like the last month and a half. And I got so much more out of like the exercises and stuff that we did.
Yeah.
Instead of just like, because I feel like just rehashing your fucking trauma over and over and over again does you no good. Because you have to learn how to fucking deal with it. And just like, I don't know, like if you just rehash it over and over and over again, that's like Scientology shit.
Mm-hmm.
It just like beats it out of you to the point where you don't feel anything. But that doesn't just apply to that situation. It applies to every fucking situation.
Well, when I was going to AA, like early on when I stopped drinking, what I found was that after going there and talking about alcohol that entire time, all I wanted to do
was a fucking drink.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All
absolutely.
I wanted to do. Because what we did for the last hour is talk about doing the substances I enjoy doing. Right.
And that's something some people don't understand about it, is like, they're like, oh, you're just trying to mask something. I'm like, yeah, I'm sure that's part of it, but I like getting fucked up. Like,
right.
that's really what, at the core of it, I like feeling different.
Right.
And like, that's, but some people just don't get that. And like, one more thing on AA and all that is like, I did, like, one thing I learned was from a guy who doesn't come as a group for us, and we were sitting outside, there was like a meeting that had their anniversary. Mm-hmm. And these like two women gave each like a 20-minute lead, and all they did was rehash everything they did. And like, he looked at me and he goes, and this was early on, he just looked at me and he was like, I don't want to hear about what you did. We all know how to get fucked up. I want to hear about what you're doing now.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn, that's fucking spot on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It really is.
Hey, it's politics.
But first of all, I just want to let you know, Jordan, that you said CBT, and through context clues, you could not figure out if you were talking about cognitive behavioral therapy or cock and ball torture. It could have been either.
Yeah.
One.
Really? Hey, you know what? Maybe it was both.
A little bit of column A,
a little column B.
A little for you, a little for me.
But, you know, how everything has always been politics. You know, all of us have been in the mental health system for quite some time, and our access to those services is consistently determined by who's in power.
Yes.
It is a lot harder to get like intake into the system now than it was when I first tried to get into the system in 2014. And that is, I can't imagine, like, thankfully Jordan found his way in.
Yeah.
Now, yeah. Because it's, you know, they've kicked everybody off of Medicaid.
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah.
And I don't know if I should say this or not, but whatever. I just got my recertification letter for, like, the next year. So I'm
that's great.
And I don't plan on it being a full year, but just the fact that I have that little bit of a safety net is good, you know, because, like, I mean, dude, people are getting cut. I wouldn't be surprised if by the end of dipshit's presidency, it's gone completely. Mm. Or, you know, close to completely.
Yeah, well, completely gutted.
Somebody is going to have to clue him in about that. And this is something that not a lot of people realize, but you have to have people on Medicaid. You have to have these claims for these people that don't have means being paid, because otherwise the EMTALA payments, which are the payments that they make to emergency rooms to treat people regardless of insurance,
yeah,
like basically ensuring that you can go to the ER and, like, they won't turn you away, those are going to increase exponentially if you don't have people on Medicaid, because that'll be their only option.
Because emergencies are still going to happen.
So all that is going to happen is you're moving the money around, but it's all still eventually going to go to the same place. So you might as well have it be more of a benefit for people that need it, instead of pretending that, oh, I'm not paying for this trans person surgery.
Right.
Which is not happening.
Right. And, like, on top of that, like, even if you do have health care, there's still politics involved because of the fact of, like, what they're willing to cover, because it's the government who negotiate what your, you know, your packages look like with health care in general.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I have health care insurance right now, and my mental health is only covered for 6 months.
That's crazy.
And no matter what my doctor tries to do, or my therapist, like, they can't seem to get more coverage, no matter what they label me as.
So it's, does it only, like, pay for one therapy visit a week for 6 months, or do you,
Yep, because I wanted to up it to twice a week.
Yeah.
And we couldn't get that done.
I've been at that point before. That sucks. Especially if you need that and you can't get it.
Right. And then, like, that's another thing. It's like everything's been so politicized to the fact, but it's always been political.
Yeah.
Like, those systems have been in place for politics to be involved long before I was even alive. So, like, you know, when you go through certain things, and sure, like, on the outside looking in, it's probably something that somebody could handle or they can go through. But I also don't feel like I've already put such a strain on my personal relationships through past things that I've gone through, that the things that I'm going through now, it'd just be so much nicer to go to a professional with.
Yeah.
Because also the people who I'm talking to aren't qualified to help me.
Right.
It's nice of them to listen.
Right.
They're good people for listening, but they're not, they don't have the tools that I would need or to be shown to deal with these types of trauma or stresses or life circumstances.
Right.
Cause I recently went through a divorce and it got ugly quickly. You know, just to get through all of that, like, before I went back to therapy, and that was even a strain on my relationship because they felt, like, offended that I needed to go back to therapy.
That's fucked.
Even though, like, I was in therapy while we were together for the most part, and it was, like, the last 4 months of our marriage, I wasn't in therapy. And that's honestly when I realized that shit was a lot worse than what I thought.
What you had seen.
Yeah, or, like, because of the therapy, I think it actually elongated that marriage probably longer than it should have been, which is also why I switched therapists when I went back into therapy.
Sure.
So they were just teaching you coping strategies in order to deal with the problem instead of
dealing with the problem.
Right. And then, but also like they kept saying like, you got to stick with it. You got to stick with it. You got to stick with it. When literally I'm the only one fighting for this relationship. Even, you know, the one of the last conversations I had with my ex, I was like, would you be open to going to couples therapy? And she said to me, well, why don't we just admit that the relationship's over?
Oh, yeah, at that point.
And I still stuck around for another 7 months.
Damn.
Hoping things would
work out.
Yeah. You know, I was like, I just need to be patient with them.
Yeah, but when things need to, when you know, that takes two people. And if one person's just not willing, then, yeah, like, it's like, what's, and I'm not saying, like, I'm not coming, it's like, why waste your time?
You sure, know what I mean? Yeah. That, and like, there's two sides. There, I'm sure she has her reasons.
Absolutely.
And, I'm sure she has her logic behind all of it, but it was still painful for me.
100%.
It'd been like, and because I had been spending, at that point, I'd been spent a year and a half sleeping on the couch.
Damn.
Because of, like, you know, issues within the home. And, you know, like, to have somebody help me through that longer than 6 months, because I definitely need to talk about this situation longer than, well, like, or just having to go through these new life experiences that I haven't had to deal with in 12 years, like dating again, living alone, you know, having a dog on my own, like that shit like that, like, or like just having to generally function without there being, I mean, I guess I was a lot more self-sufficient than I had thought.
Yeah.
You know, they realized that, like, oh, a lot of the things that this person said I needed them for, or like they thought that I was dependent on them for, I really wasn't, you know, I'm a lot, I guess I got my shit a little bit more together than I had thought. At the same time, the only reason that shit is still together because of the therapy, because of the meds I'm on, things like that. Now,
yeah,
even if I skip it, you know, sometimes I'll try and skip a day just to kind of like, for money reasons, just like elongate my
prescription.
My meds. Yeah. A little bit, which is so funny that like I'm trying to elongate my meds, not for like substance abuse issues, is because of, like, actually being able to take them consistently. And like, even when I miss a day, like I am unfunctional.
Yeah.
Like I can't function whatsoever.
Yeah, man, I've been there. If I missed a dose of a couple of the meds I was on, it felt like I had a really bad case of the flu.
Yeah.
And I was just done. And like, or if I got sick the night before and threw up my meds, which happened quite a bit.
Yeah.
But now I am off psych meds.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank
you. That's great. I cannot say the same. I'm on Lexapro and I'm on Wellbutrin. And
oh, man.
The max of what you can take of both.
Yeah, that's rough, man, because I've been on Wellbutrin. That's
I prefer the Wellbutrin over the Lexapro, to be honest with you.
Oh.
The Lexapro makes me a little spacey from time to time. Like, even last night, I noticed, like, there was times where I would, like, pause for a long period of time. And like, it was like when a CD skips type deal.
I
just was trying to figure out where I got left off, you know.
They just upped my Zoloft, like, because I was on like 150 for the longest time. And I took it down to 50. I was like, I can't, because I just felt like a fucking zombie. And I was on 200 Lamictal, and I cut myself down to 100. But I just started with this new therapist, and she was like, all right, I'll keep you at 100 Lamictal. She was like, but with your anxiety and your depression right now, I would like you to go back up to 100 of Zoloft. I was like, okay, I just don't want it to be a permanent solution. She was like, it doesn't have to be.
No.
So
most therapists are like that. This is my funniest thing about a lot of people saying, like, oh, like, I don't want to go to a therapist because they're just going to try and put me on drugs.
That's not what they do.
Yeah, it's not what they do, for starters. And then when they do that, they make it clear to you that this is just a tool of coping.
That's what people don't understand, is that, like, I have, like, my roommate where I'm at, like, he is on all kinds of shit, and he's just a miserable fucking prick all the time. And I'm like, dude, he goes, oh, well, they keep up in my meds and nothing's working. I said, but you're not trying to make things better.
Right.
You have to actively, like, these are just in place to help you while you work on yourself.
Yep.
And like, people don't understand that. They just think, oh, they're feeding me pills to make me feel better. Well, let me ask you a question. Do you feel fucking better just taking your pills? No, you have to actively work on yourself.
Right.
Well, it's also, especially with the antipsychotics that I was on, when you're confronted with a situation where generally you would react a certain kind of way that's problematic, and you have that little extra tool you can use where it's like, this pill is making me feel like this. If I can just focus on this feeling, then I can deal with this situation in mm-hmm. a different manner. And that is what I got out of the pills more than anything. It wasn't a general feeling of well-being.
Right.
It was just, when I am confronted with a situation that is going to make me react a certain kind of way that people don't like, I now have this other tool in my arsenal that I can use.
Right.
It's not a fix.
Right.
Right.
Just like booze and abusing meds is not a fix.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, don't get me wrong. Like, Xanax does make me feel better. It calms down my panic. But like, when I'm just using that as a crutch to get through every little thing in my life, the rebound effects of it are 10 times fucking worse.
Yep.
10 times worse.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then you add booze to the mix, you know, it's bad. It's a bad fucking cocktail, man.
Oh, yeah.
But the unfortunately, because there's so much money in the alcohol industry, to the point where there's a specific government agency devoted to the enforcement of all of said rules, regulations, and you know, people getting handouts for beer and stuff. There's just no escaping it.
I mean, let's be honest about it. It's a controlled substance of poison.
That's absolutely
what it is. And that's the reason why they have to have laws and regulations over it, because it is a poison.
Yeah.
You know, I worked in, I was a beer rep up until like 6 months ago. So,
yeah. You know, I remember when you got that job.
Yeah. I mean, I was working for a brewery for a little while, and then I left the brewery and I worked for a distributor. And I was like, the distributor, when I worked for them, I realized like how many laws are in place as far as even just how alcohol is distributed was baffling to me. And I was like, oh yeah, because we deal with a poison. Like, we're constantly distributing like a controlled poison. And even like what I was even able to do for like, so many people break those laws as like that's how powerful a lot of these beer companies are. Like Anheuser-Busch, Miller Coors, what's the last one? I forget what they're called, but they distribute Sapporo. And they're like so powerful to the point where they openly break laws.
Yeah.
Mm.
That are set in place, and it's just a part of doing business.
That's wild.
It is. It's amazing how many people include fines. Mm-hmm. As cost of doing business. I worked for a drug testing lab out in Colorado, mm-hmm. and they had to pay a $2 million fine to Medicare for illegal billing practices. And we had a party for it because they got the fine down from like $6 million. And and it was just, the guy got like a bonus.
Yeah,
that
of course.
Negotiated with Medicare,
yeah.
And we had a party, and we still did the thing.
Mm.
We still did the thing that we had gotten busted for illegal billing, because it's just like, this is what has to happen for us to continue to do this service.
Well, it's the same reason I stopped. Like, I have a degree in pharmaceutical engineering. Okay. I never got a job in pharmaceuticals because, well, my degree, really, you make drugs.
Mm-hmm.
But again, there's all that legislation, all that bad politics and bad behavior from those money hungry capitalist CEOs that like I knew that they, like you can only dance with the devil for so long before you become his mistress.
Absolutely.
So I don't want to be constantly dependent on that paycheck from this particular company or this particular industry, because I knew how corrupt it could be. And the company that I got a position offered to me, which was a very, very generous offer. It was over generously to the point of like, I'm just now coming out of college and you're offering me a fuck ton of money to come work for you. And it made me wonder why.
Exactly. Yep.
Because it's not like they asked me what my grades were.
They're not paying you to be a pharmaceutical engineer. They're paying you to be somebody on paper who wants you to do what they want you to do.
Yeah, I was going
to
be a patsy.
Yeah,
I
was absolutely.
A fall guy. And that's what happened to the person who ended up taking the position. Was they were developing a cancer drug. They knew it had become compromised. And they still released it because, you know, they've had millions upon millions upon millions of dollars behind that drug already before it even gets to the market. So they just wanted to push that drug out there, you know, take all the legal repercussions because they knew they were going to still make money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It costs lives, but you know, that CEO's yacht got a little bigger. So good for him.
You know, and that's the thing is like, you know, you're talking like, oh, there's millions and millions and millions in research behind this. For a company that makes billions and billions and billions. Millions is nothing to them. It's fucking pennies.
Right.
And it's, you know, and that's, I mean, just to bring that back around to fucking politics is like, the reason I don't trust any fucking politicians is because once you reach a certain level, fucking money gets involved and you become corrupt, whether you wanted to or not. There's companies that prop up these politicians. And then, oh, well, this isn't going to work for us, so you can't, you know, vote this way. And it's all fucking corrupt. Like, capitalism has completely corrupt this whole fucking thing.
Yeah, any democracy that's paired with capitalism is no longer a democracy, especially when you've now, in politics, legalized money as free speech.
Yeah.
That's no longer free speech. That is a bullhorn in a room full of quiet talkers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I the age old saying like money talks, and it's usually the loudest voice in the room. And even the politicians that seem to have had some integrity, in my opinion, like, you know, to name names here is like Bernie Sanders or AOC,
yep,
have now all become bought out by these major corporations. And then them saying they want to only deal with small donors, small private donors, is now complete bullshit.
Because
they're now taking money from major corporations so they can continue. But that's the game. That's the corrupt political process.
Exactly.
And like anybody who, I had a conversation about this yesterday, where anybody who believes that both Democrat and Republican aren't two branches of the same corrupt tree are either a fool or a liar.
I 100% agree. I've been saying that, obviously, because it's not like we're the first people to say that.
Right.
It's just like, if you don't see, if you can't look at the last, I mean, I'll even venture to say fucking 30, 40, 50 years and see that the two-party system is a complete failure to the people, but a success to both parties, you're an idiot.
Right.
I would argue that that kind of way of looking at it is does nothing, because you still have to operate within the system.
Sure.
We aren't changing to an Israeli style 9-party system with coalitions and nonsense. We're not even going to go like Canada with a 2-party system with the far left isolated into the NDP.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is going to change with the current system, so you have to look at it more acutely than this is all just poison and useless. And
that's why I call for a complete upheaval of it. I mean, I said that on the show a couple weeks ago.
Yeah,
but you've been saying it for years. Honestly, like I said that statement and I was like, this is something Jordan has been saying to me for close to a decade now.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying it now, like as if I just come up with it.
That is accurate. Jordan has always had that.
Yeah, he's a, and you know, it's funny because we always just kind of chalked it up as like you wanting, you enjoying watching chaos happen.
Nah, fuck that.
And there, and then the older you get, you're like, holy shit, the guy was actually a lot more right than me.
Yeah, I just,
I get where you're coming from, sure, I do. But it's just I've just watched it fucking burn over and over and over again, and it's still burning.
Yeah,
I think it's also because I interact with more people on the right at a micro level than a macro level,
yeah.
And I see how fucking different they are
right
from people on the left. And I can't, like, there isn't a fucking tree that has red apples and green apples.
Sure,
like it's. It's clearly different trees.
Well, also, too, just most political, or it's designed by people, and people are flawed. We miss out on details. We don't consider everything.
Right.
And we don't consider everything until it's brought to our attention. So there's going to be flaws in any man-made system. The only thing that's been kind of fun to watch is that we knew for a very long time that American politics was designed to be a snake that eats its own tail, and it's kind of fun seeing it halfway up its own body.
I mean, yeah, that it kind of was installed with that safeguard, but
yes.
I don't know if they thought past that.
No, they hadn't, because they couldn't have. They didn't. I mean, because the country when we started out was so, I guess in a sense, even our richest were still pretty poor in comparative to, you know, other established lands at the time, a.k.a. England.
Yeah.
Even our most richest people were still pretty poor. So to them, it was like the idea of an oligarchy coming in through that political system was so far-fetched. Because they thought, like, man, what a long road it would take to get there.
Right.
And who could accomplish that? And now we have, you know, what, three different companies ruling the world.
Yep.
And, you know, 0.01% of the population, or 0.01% of the richest people in the world own, like, 90% of the wealth, like, whatever the fuck the stat is. Like,
yeah.
It's insane to me that, like, we think, or we've been convinced, that we are a country of options.
It's an illusion.
Yes.
It's an absolute illusion. I mean, and fucking Carlin said that 40 fucking years ago.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, people always say, oh, you're just parroting him. Well, guess what? He was fucking right.
Yeah.
He was right about everything he talked about.
I hate how relevant he still is to I hate it.
It's scary. Yeah. Go ahead, Shear, sorry.
What I hate is there are all these new comics coming out when doing impressions of, like, Andrew Dice Clay and Mitch Hedberg and the countless Stanhope clones. But everybody that tries to do George Carlin is just, like, a dangerously insane old man. That can barely get their words out in between pulls of fortified wine. There isn't like a new, like, a refresh of Carlin. And then
I would say Burr is probably the closest.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah, I mean, he is the closest, especially when it comes to him having an angry point of view.
Yes.
Not even just that. I mean, the way he's pointing out the shit about billionaires and that stuff is very Carlin-esque. Burr's doing it in his own way.
Sure.
And I don't think he's parroting him at all. But, I mean, I've said that those last 7 years or so where he's gotten a little more political and he's pushed the bounds. I don't think he's going to go full on Carlin where it becomes,
hey, I'm going to start doing wordplay jokes.
He's not, because he's already taken money from the Saudis for that comedy festival. He's on that.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. Isn't that
sucks.
Isn't that fucked
sucks.
Up?
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
I'm going to go kill a journalist while I'm there. MBS said, hey, you want to borrow my bone saw? And I said, sure.
Don't meet your heroes. Or don't, like, yeah, that's the thing. Don't have heroes.
Yeah, yeah. You will be let down.
Yeah.
You absolutely will be let down.
Hmm.
I mean, but, like, as far as, like, just the comparison to Byrne Carlin, like, just the, I don't think, like, because I think that from, like, 99 on, maybe even before that a little bit, Carlin became, it was still comedy, but it was spoken word. It was very much like, I'm making a fucking point. Yeah, there's funny bits in there, but I'm making a point.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I'll ever see Bill Burr get to like that. And I don't think he should either.
No.
Because Carlin was so, he was a word master.
Yeah, that, and he had such a rhythm to it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like his speed ups and slowdowns, and like, it was jazz and, you know, in word form.
You know? Oh, you don't think I'm jazzy? I got a black wife. Jazzy as fuck.
That's perfect.
That
I
is
love
really
it.
Really good.
That's great.
That's how I'm gonna get on Kill Tony. I'm gonna be like, please welcome Bill Burr with hair.
Hey. And get rid of my alopecia!
And then you'll rarely get asked back like Jeremy Watkins or Jeremiah Watkins.
Did you ever see those like those old clips of Kill Tony when Bill Burr went on there the one time and just fucking destroyed Tony Hinchcliffe?
Yeah, called him a cunt.
Yeah, it was great. Because I don't like that guy. I've never liked that guy. So I've always been like, oh, that's great. That's my favorite roasting that motherfucker.
I think that has... Tony Hinchcliffe and like a lot of the in our realm has been like the dawn of the now everything is politics people.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden it's infecting the comedy world.
Right.
But it always has affected the comedy world.
Yes.
It was just you guys out there that are like, this is all new to me. You haven't dealt with these right-wing idiots for years and years and years and tried to keep some of them out of your rooms because they were genuinely dangerous.
Now they have a whole city to themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's becoming like New York and L.A. in terms of comedy tourism. Like,
yeah.
It's one of those places you can go down there. And like, I'm just going to go see some shows, and that's what people do.
I don't think it's sustainable, though.
That's it's not. I think it's already proving to not be.
Yeah. Because, like, there's only really one club, and then, like the juxtaposition of it is the Creek in the Cave, where that's where, like, the people who wouldn't want to go to the Mothership will go and do their comedy, or, like, they'd go see shows there. And it's not quite as popular, but, like, I think that it being only Joe Rogan down there and Joe Rogan being such an isolated individual as far as the amount of money he's made,
yeah,
that it's not going to be a sustainable, like it's going to be a very like, well, it's already become such a weird exclusive club of like, just like the Tony Hinchcliffe Hall of Famers or whatever the fuck it is.
Mm.
And that guy, like, it's such a weird thing because there have been really great comics and comics that I agree with their politics or they're genuinely funny human beings where regardless of whether I agree with their politics have come through his system of, you know, one joke become popular. Now the bad side to that is that it's only 1 minute of material that you became very popular over. And sometimes people don't realize that you're supposed to have, like, now that you've gained that kind of success through that podcast and in that 1 minute, now you need an hour's worth of material.
Yeah.
It's the same thing that happened with Last Comic Standing back in the day because Dat Fan won the first season and he didn't have 45 minutes and he was getting headlining. Like, this is not new.
Yeah.
Like, it's the same thing as Star Search or The Tonight Show.
Search is a really great comparison.
Yeah. Because the what they're supposed to be showing you on Star Search is these are the best amateurs that we can find. And then Last Comic Standing came along with the, like, it was the same conceit because it was around the same time as American Idol, and people that didn't know any better, like, really thought that, no, this was, like, a nobody that we're discovering out of nowhere. But, you know, in order to get on the show, you had to have representation, and they weren't pulling people from the cattle calls.
Sure.
But, like, Kill Tony has, you know, really fucked it up. Because you'll have the actual amateurs on there, and then one of them will get a break, and then all of a sudden, like, at the middle of nowhere clubs, you'll see these people co-headlining with just a Kill Tony credit.
Right.
I mean, that what, Cam, is Cam Patterson? Is that his name?
The guy that just got SNL?
Yeah, he, I mean, he did the Funny Stop maybe 6 months, a year ago, right after he hit. And I mean it. I was like, I wonder how long he can actually do. You know what I mean? Because it
doesn't matter. He got SNL.
Yeah, no, that's what. But that's what I'm saying is that's what I was. I guess that was the point I was trying to make is like he's not doing tours. He's now on SNL, which good for him. That's fucking great. But like, I feel like those people who are naturally funny are going to be more suited for something like that where they can write a 4 or 5 minute sketch, act in something instead of getting up and doing 45 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's sometimes that's the person's goal to begin with anyway. So
sure,
good on him for hitting it earlier and not wasting a lot of our time
yeah.
having to try and get there, you know, like, and trying to suffer through a very weak 45 minutes of material because that's all they have.
Right.
Mm.
And that's as good as it's going to get for now, you know, until they can get some years behind them and develop what their material is. But, you know, good on them for getting to where, I guess, a spot where they're better suited earlier. But to your point of it being like, you know, what is the reality of some of these short-term or like short content like TikTokers or Instagram people who they got famous over putting out these 1 or 2 minute videos. Can they sustain doing a full 45 minutes? Some of them can.
Yeah.
I mean, like a really great example of that is like, you know, Elijah Neville, who's a really great example of like when opportunity meets talent.
Yeah.
Like he is truly a talented, funny, he can do 45 minutes and it's entertaining. It's good. It's thoughtful. And he's 21 years old, like 20, 21 years old. Like he's a really great example of a person who like, yes, they blow up on TikTok, but they have the chops to back it up.
Sure.
Yeah. He put in the work too. Like,
yes.
Even now that he's like getting like headlining gigs out of town, he's still showing up to mics and working out
all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Two or three mics a night.
Yeah.
Like he has definitely got a very strong work ethic. And, but also there's no such thing as an overnight success. Like he had been doing his TikTok and his Instagram and his social media for almost a decade.
Right.
And a lot of people don't realize that. Mm-hmm. He's been doing it for a very, very long time, making videos. Maybe not at the consistency he's doing it now.
Yeah.
But he has been doing it for a long time. And, you know, again, he blew up during a time where we had nothing better to do than watch TikTok
right.
and Instagram.
And I think that that's like going back to like the sustainability part of it. Mm-hmm. Like, whereas for some people that is going to work. Like, but, you know, where money is at now as far as the entertainment industry is, yes, you got to get popular on social media, but you have to do a live show. People want to come see you. Depending on what your area is, I mean, you look at bands. They don't make shit off their music anymore. They make all their money from touring.
Yeah.
And that is going to be the same across the board.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I make all my money from blackmailing people. and also, I forgot to tell you, Let the Hate Flow Through You is a barefoot podcast now, and we're that release we're going to use to sell pictures of your feetsies.
That's fine.
Okay. I can pay rent another month. yeah, there's the live show is important, but you know, people are
to be barefoot now.
No, you're fine. We'll get to the point. Okay. I'll be like, it's time for the feetsies. But people are getting their shows canceled now for being on the wrong side of whatever political thing is going on. Now it's the Charlie Kirk thing when we're recording this. The weird thing that I've seen is, do you know Cliff Cash? Okay, he's from the South. But he's a very left-wing political comic and has been for years.
I think I know who you're talking about now, yeah.
And he just blew up, like, more over the past year than the entire time I've known him. But ever since the Charlie Kirk assassination, he's been getting his gigs canceled. And it's not like they're just now finding out, this guy is a libtard.
Right.
It's pretty much his whole deal.
Right, right, right.
And it's bizarre that that particular side has picked this moment to be like, ah, now we've got you.
Right. Well, like, also, too, like, you think back at, like, Lenny Bruce, who was getting arrested for saying curse words and speaking up against judges and politicians. I mean, that was the real problem, is that Lenny Bruce, they made the cursing thing a point of contention because they knew it would play better.
Yeah.
And as far as, like, the general public is concerned, then it would be him making fun of judges and politicians.
Yeah. Judges do not like when you come after them at all.
No.
I had a listener go to jail for a number of years for starting a smear campaign against a judge. It, like, honestly doesn't matter the side of the aisle. They want unconditional respect.
Right.
And it's a problem.
You can unconditionally blow me.
there's a
punishment.
I sentence you to blow El Hordano Diablo, and you'll stay on there until he's done.
Yeah, maybe that was what Epstein killed himself over.
Yeah.
Not many people know that fact.
Yeah. El Hordano Diablo gets brought into Rikers Island like Hannibal Lecter, except the mask is over his dick.
I just walk in, and there's that, like, big buff cop. I'm like, out of the way.
I'm here to handle my business.
Yeah, he's like, well, I'd rather just choke on this towel than choke on Hordano's dick.
No comment.
Everybody makes that decision eventually.
Yeah, it's either off yourself or blow me. Yeah. That's it.
Those are your choices.
Hey, you should just be thankful I gave you enough credit that he might choke on it.
Yeah, that's...
Everybody thinks Kaczynski died of cancer. Nope.
I always wondered.
Ah, unit below me.
Unicomer.
Jesus Christ. All right, so Jeremy, where can we find you on the internets?
You can find me on Instagram at Jeremy_Demery. It's Jeremy_Demery. You can find me at secretsocietycomedy.com. You can find me at Golden Ox Studio. You can also listen to my podcast, which is called Not Weird, Just Homeschooled. Which I should have both of you on.
Yeah, I think that would be fun.
You guys would both be great. Where else can you find me? I just produced a television show out of Columbus for a Columbus comedian called Not Even Funny. I'm really excited about it. It's essentially like a show about a guy who lost his daughter to suicide and how he gains support and strength through his community and comedy.
Well, that sounds good.
Yeah, it was really. It's been Neff Johnson was the star of it, and he, honestly, man, it was such like we had not known each other before this project.
Yeah,
and by the time we were done, we were like, I would consider him one of my best friends.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Can't wait for it to check it out.
What a good collaborative experience will do for your relationship mm-hmm. with somebody.
We really grew as friends during that whole project, you know. And I had started off that project, you know, married and a homeowner, so you know, going through all of that. And then luckily having, because he's also a person who takes his mental health very seriously. So having, you know, him around was such like an unexpected godsend that, like, you know, having him have gone through like even more traumatic stuff and having survived it in the way he has, and I guess growing stronger in him within himself, going through that, was a nice person, I guess, to be around.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Hell yeah. So Jordan, I don't think we're going to find anybody that hates people who are just now saying it's all politics as much as Jeremy Demery.
No, there is another.
And scene. I won't apologize again. I'm a rapid offender. You can see right through my skin. I don't care about making mistakes. I keep saying no. I'm falling on my face. Feed me nominated. Drag me to the ring. Another discharge may burn.
This has been a Lousy Weather Media Network production. Find new episodes and archives at lousyweathermedia.com.